Well, let's start with, I want to go back to a couple of things in the war period that I felt in reading the transcript I hadn't covered well enough. One of them was the attitudes of the men in the plant. I know it's hard since we've been talking about current Union stuff to kind of put yourself back then. The attitudes of the men in the plant when you first came in and the changes that still all during the war period, up to the end of the war, say from the time you first hire in till 45 when the layoffs begin, what kind of changes you felt occurred in the attitudes of the men in the plant, both the rank and file workers and the supervisory personnel towards the women and their work? Do you remember changes?
Well, the changes, I found that, of course, being a young person, you know, and I got married during the war, and so it was well known that I was married. I didn't have any problem, any sexual problems as far as these men pressuring me that way, but it was known that I was an organizer, and some of them, you know, used to just try to catch me organizing and collecting my 50 cents a month dues and that sort of thing. Others just kind of overlooked it. However, I found that I did gain respect, and then we finally did have our election and the union was in, more than anything, we earned respect. Mm-hmm. Really, we did. And their attitude was, okay, well, the unions are here, and the UAW is the one that won the election. And the management on a high level that we dealt with industrial relations didn't have much of a problem. But we did have a problem in the shop with some of our industrial relations unit men who were not trained, in handling union, interpreting union contracts and that sort of thing. And so it was difficult. It was difficult to start with. Mm-hmm. And as the years went by, of course, then the company did hire people who were college educated and trained in labor relations, and things became easier as far as labor relations were concerned. But in the shop, we did have some old hard supervisors, you know, hard nose, who thought that unions shouldn't be in, and they didn't give a damn what the contract says. If they tell you to do something and when to do it and so forth, why, you better do it or else, you know, see? And they were the ones that the grievances were filed in those areas, you see. And so that is just about it, really and truly.
What about the attitude?
As far as I'm concerned, yeah. Okay? My own experience.
What about attitudes towards the women as workers and their abilities? Did you notice any changes in the attitudes of the men in the shop, say, when the women first came in? Were they suspicious and felt they couldn't do it and then gradually adjusted, or were they fairly open to the fact that they might be able to do this industrial work?
Well, no, those men that remained behind, a lot of them were 4F or did have, you know, the deferments to train. Some of those were actually not too well educated, but they were mechanically inclined and that sort of thing. And a lot of them, just because that they got the deferment, they would put up with the women. And some of them had seemingly a lot of patience, you know, and would really go way out of their way to teach the women how to perform their operations and that sort of thing. And others, those that were just like on a 4F basis because they couldn't possibly, you know, go into service. Well, they used to give the girls a bad time. They didn't, the hell with them, they didn't care. Mm. They didn't care if they'd learn or not, you know? And so I happened to be lucky when I first hired in, because the two fellows that they put me with were just good old guys, you know, and they had a lot of patience. And so I lucked out there. But I'd say the majority of them were there to do a job. I really do. And just a few of those that were 4F in the area that I worked in, mm-hmm. that gave us a bad time. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. you know, but now after the war, and after we had gained our election and our bargaining rights there, there were a lot of men who did resent the women very much because we had established our seniority, you know. And they really resented the women coming back that had retained, you know, had retained accumulated their seniority. They really did. There were very, very few women in that shop, believe me, but the few that came in, such as myself, you know, well, I was still pretty young then, and in fact, that's why I ran for steward. 1947 was the first time I ran for office, even though I was an organizer and way back in 42. They had a hard time getting anyone to represent them, you know, and out of a department, say, of about 80 people, good Lord, there couldn't have been over four or five women, you know. Mm-hmm. And so being that people in there knew that I helped organize the UAW, you know, a lot of them that I'd signed up and everything else. They said, well, how about running for shop steward? And I said, oh, no, I didn't want to be an elected official, you know. And so finally, the chief steward, who was the president of the union at that time, he came over and he said, well, we need help, and would you please run? And I said, well, I don't know much about the contract. I don't know anything about the contract, you know. I said, I am pleased the UAW is in. I said, but if you're willing to help me. Well, at that time, our Constitution still said that you must be in the plant for 90 days before you can run for office, even though you have retained and accumulated your seniority. Going out of the bargaining unit, coming back, you still had to be in 90 days. Well, I wasn't in quite 90 days when the election was opened. So they just kept the dates open until I had established my seniority again, you know, my 90 days, and I ran. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that I can look back and see where it was a help for the women, because these men didn't want to hold an office, but they wanted somebody to represent them, you know. And being a young person, you know, I had a way of talking to them and getting around and everything else, and so I was elected. Now, they accepted me because they needed me. You know, they needed me.
The issue was, in effect, during the war, we know the women have to be here. But once the war is over...
That's right.
What are they doing here?
That's exactly right. What are they doing here? What are the women doing here? Why aren't they home, you know, taking care of the babies or keeping house or whatever? And most of us gals that had kept our seniority up and kept working, you know, we needed that job. We needed that job.
You think the men understood that?
Well, it took a while. It took some education, you know. And like I say, you know, even be in there and to be able to work there, you had to be good. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't, they would just, you know, they wouldn't help you. You know, they wouldn't help you, wouldn't loan you a tool to work with or help you set anything up or lift anything, you know. They would freeze you out, see. So
there were, you say that there were about five of you.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Just, yeah. You know, there are about five women probably out of a department, about 80.
Who had the seniority and came back in?
They were able to come back, yes, on a recall.
Yeah. Now, did they came in then after reconversion, see? Or like you were there?
All right, now, 1945, okay. So, according to our contract, you can retain your seniority for 2 years. You can be on recall for 2 years if you register every 90 days. All right, so like I was offered a job in Santa Monica. I went over there as an A, and I was, when I hired in over there, I was even making more money than the man that was training me. Mm-hmm. And so every 90 days, I kept renewing my seniority, you know, and all that sort of thing. And when it came down to the last 3 months, the company sent me a job offer for a B assembler. And I was on recall for an A assembler. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't want to lose my seniority, and I wanted to get back home. So I accepted that job. And I got in the plant, and therefore, my seniority had accumulated. A lot of the gals had not been, even though they were offered a job at B, they wouldn't take it. They wanted their age up, so they lost. So a lot of the girls lost all that seniority, you see. So there were just very few of us that cared enough to come back at a lower job.
Oh, I see.
To get in the plant and to be able to protect your seniority. Because at the end of 24 months, that was it. See? So,
now, to your knowledge, Betty, were there separate men and women seniority lists on the recalls, or was it a single real seniority list?
Well, it was, I don't know for sure at that time, because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't that active union-wise. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know that that once I became active, there were cases of where some of the men were offered jobs and didn't come back, you know. And because they were making more money in Santa Monica, and then when finally Santa Monica's work came down, then they came back to Long Beach, and then they applied to the seniority committee for the restoration of their seniority. You know, they asked for it back. They said, well, you know, they said, well, we were making good money, we had a family, and so we couldn't come back at a lower rate, et cetera, and now that I'm back here, I remember this one particular case. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm back here in Long Beach, and we have bought a home here, and so therefore I'd like to have my seniority restored. That was just one case, you know. And believe it or not, the Union Seniority Committee, there are times that they would make mutual agreements and restore people's seniority. And interesting you should mention that, because here I am a shop steward, okay? So I find out about these things, and I say, well, gee whiz, no, that's not right. Why should they? When I came back at a B, I took a big cut in pay, and I had a child to raise, you know, to protect my seniority. And here's this guy over there. He's making all this money and coming back, and now he wants his all restored. And so I decided, by gosh, I'm going to find out how these things happen. So I, of course, by attending meetings and finding out who's on the seniority committee and who's on the bargaining committee and how these things happen, I decided, well, I didn't like the way they were operating. There were too many damn crooked deals signed, you know, that I heard about and that I actually found out, you know, when I traced out all the rumors that it was true, they did agree to this thing. So I decided, okay, I'm going to stay in this racket. And after I was a steward for a while, then I decided that I'd run for chief steward. I wanted to get up in a level where I could do something about the things that were not properly, where I felt they were violating the contract, and some of these sweetheart contracts mm-hmm. they were signing that I didn't think were right, okay?
When was that you ran for chief steward?
Trying to think of what year that was. It could have been maybe 48, maybe, I don't mm-hmm. know. Maybe.
So after about a year or so.
Yeah, I think so, or 49, I don't know, I can't remember. And see, a shop steward represents your department only, and a chief steward represents several departments, see? And so I ran for, I decided that the thing for me to do, if I wanted to correct some of these inequities and that sort of thing, and that I would have to get the position higher, higher, and higher to do it. So, by gosh, I ran for chief steward, I never will forget. The first call I had after I was elected chief steward was out in the flight ramp. And I think I did tell you about that in the previous tape. And here, you know, I'd never been out in the flight ramp in my life ever. All the work that I'd done was inside the buildings, the hangars, you know. And so I was out there, and here are all these big old airplanes, and the engines revving up and everything else, and I'm going out there to answer a call. And my gosh, two big old hydraulic mechanics, two guys in coveralls, great big tall guys, no greasy coveralls, you know, and here I am, a little gal. And I thought, oh, my God, I sure hope that I know what I'm doing. I sure hope that I can handle this, you know, because this would be the end of my political career, for one thing. And besides that, I'm concerned about these people, whatever, you know, their rights and that sort of thing. I want to properly represent them. So when I get out there, I found out that they were arguing amongst themselves and that it was a jealousy thing. And so one fellow ragged on his buddy. He told his boss that his buddy had taken home some shop towels, these shop rags, you know, and to get him in trouble. And so the boss had to have it investigated, and sure enough, he had a lot of stuff home in his garage. They were going to fire him. Anyway, I handled it okay and prevented him from being fired, got things straightened out, you know. So after being elected chief steward, then I thought, well, now, by gosh, to find out about how some of these things go, these promotions and in seniority order, not a seniority order, and all that sort of thing, I think that I would run for that seniority committee. So I ran for the seniority committee, and I was elected, and I became the chairman of that committee. And I introduced a system in the plant that's still being used, whereby the seniority committee would meet with the company every Tuesday and review all promotions, you know, all layoffs, you know, everything like that. In other words, we'd have a meeting with senior, this week there'll be so many people laid off. And there'll be so many bump backs. Mm-hmm. And there are so many, there's X number of cases here we'd like to talk to you about and see if we can mutually agree, you know, that's over and beyond the terms of the contract, so we can mutually agree and move these people around. And we would do that once a week. Well, as soon as we get the layoff notices, you know, after we had adjourned that meeting, I would immediately go to our little office there, our little cubby hole, and write it all down and rush it over to the union hall and have it mimeographed off, and they'd get it back to me. And I had a little bicycle. And, man, I'd get in that bicycle, and I'd go to building to building to building, give copies of it to the stewards. They would have that information even before that supervisor had it. And they'd be able to tell those people, now, hey, this week we're going to go back to layoff so-and-so in this classification, or when we're building up this week, we're going to promote in this classification here. And so those stewards had information that was really hot off the griddle, you know, and they were being able to tie down dates right in writing.
This must have been before the increase in production during Korea then, before 50.
Yes. Well, yes. This is another area, wasn't it? Yeah,
Now, when you started on that seniority committee, do you remember how they handled the issue of male and female seniority? Did it seem to you as you first came in that there was a single seniority list?
No, there wasn't a single seniority list, but there were some agreements made that were not favorable to the women, that's for sure. And I was then in a position when I became chairman of that seniority committee where I could review all agreements that had been signed. I mean, see them myself. So I was very concerned about a lot of that.
Yeah.
And And like I say, I thought that if I could publish something and put it out in the shop, all over the shop, where the stewards themselves would know the dates on these things, then a lot of these other people in the bargaining committee would not be, you know, would be a little more reluctant to make these sweetheart deals because, you know, they'd be caught at it and then they just wouldn't be elected next time, wouldn't be reelected. Mm-hmm.
Betty, going back to when you were, first before you became steward, do you recall, as you started, in effect, the way you described it before, when you were starting to organize, before the election in 44, it was because of your own feelings about what
yes.
you would meet.
Yes.
Did you, as you became more interested and started to organize, get, what kind of help and training did you then get from the union for your organizing?
Would you believe none at all? Would you believe none at all? I did this on my own. I got encouragement and verbal encouragement from some of the people who were old trade unionists in the shop. There was, you know, really, really. And in fact, I had never had anybody from UAW come to me and ask me to organize for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did it on my own.
Yeah.
And then after I started organizing, why then, of course, they came and they said, well, if we can help you in any way and answer any of your questions,
mm-hmm.
why, we will.
But there, for instance, weren't training
oh, no.
workshops for those of you
oh, no.
who were organizing.
Oh, no. Everything I did on my own as far as my education is concerned. The good old library, you know, I used, and I read up the history in UAW and that sort of thing. And, no, I did not have. They didn't have any training at all.
So the meetings that were current, were you going to the meetings during the war years before?
Oh, yes, Oh, yes. We had meetings, and they were not very large, you know, small meetings. And there were a couple of, like I said, good old trade unionists. And they were the ones that encouraged me, you know, to go on and to take part in the elections, you know. And they wanted me to run for office back in there. Of course, you know, like I say, I wasn't interested. I didn't want to be a leader or take part in the politics. I just wanted to see that it happened. And
did you understand how a meeting functioned in terms of parliamentary procedure? If you wanted to talk or make a motion, did you get any training in that?
No. I just bought a book of Robert's Rules of Order, you know. And as far as that goes, in those days, a lot of it wasn't just right according to Robert's Rules of Order. It was rough and tough. And they were noisy, and they used to drink a lot. And I mean, they used to fight a lot, you know. I know that one meeting, I was just scared to death. I didn't know if I was going to go back again or not, because my Lord, I mean, they would come to blows over issues.
What sort of issues seem to be the most volatile ones?
Well, a lot of it, at the time that I remember, it was just, as far as the issues are concerned, there were political issues amongst the people that wanted to run for office in the shop, political caucuses.
Mm.
That wanted to get the power, wanted to, you know, hold the offices, see?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, look at me. I realized when I became a shop steward, if I was concerned about how they were making promotions out of seniority order and the union was agreeing to it, I had to find out what I could do to, what it would take to stop that sort of thing, and I found out that I had to run for office,
mm-hmm.
get in there and get in the position where I would have some power and I would have some say,
mm-hmm.
and that I would be able to get the information out to the people where the votes were, let them know what's going on. If they didn't like it, they could take care of it with their vote. No, there wasn't any training.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't any training. Not until much later on. Then there were classes held. There were education classes held, which were great. And we started having stewards' councils. And from the stewards' council meeting, then we would have educational classes and that sort of thing. And in those days, we did it on our own time. You know, we'd come after work.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but during before the election and the union wins at the bargaining agent, there was
nothing. No, there wasn't. Now I don't know about the other unions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that there were other unions in there organizing,
mm-hmm.
and I have no idea. But I just know that when I started organizing, when I was interested in organizing, I said, well, now I want to meet somebody that's organizing for the UAW. What do you do? How do you go about this? You know, and so right in the shop is how they explained it to me. And, you know, this is how you do it.
Mm.
Sign up here. Join. Sign up. Okay, there it is. There's my card.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, this is what you do. They showed me how to sign other people up and how to collect dues. Had my little tiny book, you know, and I collect 50 cents a month. Had to keep it hidden and go up and down the line, collect dues every month, be very careful and all that sort of thing. And it was just education from the other UAW
mm-hmm.
organizers in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I learned.
And do they talk to, do they give you any ideas, for instance, how to deal with the conflict with the IAM while you were first organizing?
No.
And how to address the issue of the differences between the two units?
No, they didn't tell me how. They didn't tell me how at all. You know, I just, at the time, like I say, I had different organizers come up to get me to join their union. And I would listen to their arguments and the points that they were trying to make and that sort of thing. And I decided, by making comparisons at that time, and I don't recall, you know, any specific one, excepting that I thought the UAW was the most progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked Walter Reuther's history, you know, of his union.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, now, if I'm going to join a union, that's the one I'd want to join.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one I'll work for.
Those same arguments.
Definitely. Very definitely. Very definitely.
Do you recall any Wildcats during the No Strike Pledge period of the war?
No, I don't.
Because it's interesting. I don't have a sense, even out at Lockheed or Douglas, of Wildcats. Back east, there were an awful lot of Wildcats in the Detroit area, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I don't see much evidence of Wildcats here during that No Strike Pledge period.
Well, you see, it could be that because we're so new in aerospace,
mm-hmm.
we were so new, and here we were, you know, with a lot of new, one or two trade unionists, but very few, you know, and so that's probably why.
Mm, that's an interesting point. Mm. There wasn't a history of people who knew you could do it, in effect.
No, there were a couple, like I say, a couple that I worked with and would tell us about things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But to get the other people educated along the same lines was something else. Now, we did. Of course, you know, like in 51, and then we had a walkout. And, in fact, in here, in this transcript here, where I was, you know, it tells you how one whole department walked out one time in the plant.
Mm.
And that was the milling machinist. And then in 1951, we had one whole department that withdrew from the union, the painters.
Hmm.
They all withdrew from the union when I was on the bargaining committee. Because
How did you hear about the Reuthers?
How?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I hired Ann the shop, you know, and when we were talking about unions, well, I didn't know anything about him then, you know, but this old trade unionist, his name was O.G. Lompe, bless his heart, he was an old trade unionist. He was a Walter Reuther man, and so he was the one that got me interested, and then he gave me books to read.
Was he on your crew?
No, he was a tooling man.
Ah.
He was a tooling man, and he would come on, he was in tooling, and he would repair things for tools and that sort of thing, so he was around a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of free movement.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that got me interested. And he would give me literature, you know, and then I'd go to the library and that sort of thing. And he's the one that got me interested.
He basically recruited you.
He sure did. He sure did. Very knowledgeable. Not well educated,
mm-hmm.
but very knowledgeable. Very intelligent.
Was he from
yes.
the Detroit?
He was from Detroit.
Uh-huh.
He
so
was
he
from
took part in the early organization.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
What was there, do you think at the time, as you were organizing, do you remember any difference in the attitudes towards the union between the men and women as you spoke to people about the union?
No, really and truly I didn't, because, see, during the war, some of the gals, I didn't have much trouble with the women. I mean, they all realized the need, you know. And the men, they were there because they were either deferred or 4F, you know, and so without that, you know, a lot of them would have needed too. They would
mm-hmm.
have needed a union.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little more trouble getting them to sign up because they felt that they were pretty well protected because there were so few men there. They were really needed to train the women and to do the hard, heavy jobs, you see. So they didn't really need a union as badly as the women did.
Hmm.
So I did notice that, yes.
So you're saying that the women were more responsive?
Oh, very, much more responsive. Because a lot of those gals, even though some of them came from the farms and homes that never even had, like me, never even had a hammer in their hand in their life, some were very mechanically adaptable, and they would turn out to be very good workers, you know, and excellent mm-hmm. mechanics, and even better than some of these men who broke them in. But they were a little reluctant to speak up and fight their rights and that sort of thing, you know, so they thought, certainly, if I can do the job as well as this man over here, you know, if I had a union representative, I wouldn't have to fight my battles. I would have a representative up here. So I didn't really, no problem with the gals.
Did you use any women's issues at all when you spoke to them?
No.
Organizing the women?
No. Uh-huh. I never did. All the years that I was active, you know, all the years that I organized, every time, every office I ever ran for, every speech I've ever made, I never actually said, now, the women, this or the women, that. Never. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's one of the things I was very careful of. I had to make the men feel like I was one of them. Mm-hmm. One of them, you know. The fact that I was a woman, obviously a woman, they all finally accepted, and I was there. As long as I was willing to fight their battles, mm-hmm. I could have had two heads. They wouldn't have cared. You know.
But in speaking to the women in terms of their needs as women to be represented, for instance, about what might happen to them during the post-war period, you didn't think about it in those terms or approach them in those terms?
The things that I did talk about was the seniority agreements. Mm-hmm. You see, that even though they could do the job and possibly much better than this man over here, mm-hmm. if you don't have a seniority agreement, then you know, the company could hire and fire however. And at least if they're, you know, we have a seniority agreement, and they run recall, they'd be recalled back in seniority order, and if they could perform the job, it was theirs. You see?
So that was part of the organization.
Oh, yes, that part of it, definitely. Mm-hmm. On the seniority agreement, very definitely. But never when they took the women's issue, as far as that's concerned. You know, never had any.
Do you remember anything about the election in 44 itself?
Well, I remember that I thought it was pretty calm. After some of the meetings that I'd been to, where these fellows beating each other up and drinking and all that sort of thing, you know, at the Union Hall, my Lord, I thought it was very well conducted. I was pleasantly surprised, to be quite honest with you. I really was.
What did you feel the chances were of the UAW winning as you went into the election?
I felt very, very positive about it. I thought we had an excellent chance.
And
I know.
It actually was a fairly close election.
Yes, I don't remember exactly, but it was. Uh-huh. Yeah. But I thought we had maybe it's because I felt so strongly about the UAW. Yeah. You know, I didn't have any problem at all organizing. I mean, I had no problem.
Do you recall, if it's possible to separate it out, how much general anti-union sentiment there was, and then which would be against either union as bargaining agent? How much of that you encountered? Among both the men and women, and what differences there might be, and how much of it was yes, we need a union, but anti-UAW sentiment?
No, I didn't have any problem as far as being anti-UAW. I had, after the war, when the men came back, a lot of them there were several that felt that we don't need a union, you know. Why should I, you know, my country owes me this job, and you know, I say, well, look, there's a clause in the contract that says if you're veterans, then you may come back, you know, all that sort of thing. And we have fought very hard to enact laws to protect your rights, you know, and it's the union lobbying and so forth that does this sort of thing. I ran into that with some of the vets. And then I ran into another thing that I would run into is that a lot of them, they just didn't want to pay the dues. Mm. They wanted all the benefits, but they didn't want to pay the dues. And so it was quite a job mm-hmm. organizing. It really mm-hmm. was, even though our dues were very low.
Yeah.
And we used to have all kinds of campaigns whereby, you know, with no initiation fee, and then we'd have these drives for the stewards for, I remember back during the war when nylons were so scarce, you know, we'd have these contests. If you sign up 5 members, you get a pair of nylons, you know. And they give what they call like little tickets or like green stamps, and we call them boodle bucks. And for every person you sign up, you get a boodle buck, see? And you could get, for 5, you get a pair of nylons, or if you save them all up. I remember one time, I used to sign people up and give them my chits. But one of the fellows had cashed his in for a mixmaster for his wife, and I told my little girl, I said, my gosh, Mary Beth, wouldn't it be neat to have one of those, because we could never afford to buy a mixmaster, you know? And so I thought, well, heck, I'm going to save my little boodle bucks myself there for a while. And by gosh, I got a mixmaster myself. And after we got the mixmaster, then I gave mine away, you know, organizing. But
that's interesting, because if they were using nylon, it means that they were assuming that the women were going to be doing the organizing, doesn't it? Or I guess you could be giving it to your wife.
Oh, please. Sure. Oh, no, it'd be for themselves, for their wives, because we didn't have that many women out there. We didn't have that many women active, you know.
How many, do you have any sense of how many women were organizing informally the way you were during the period before the election?
I don't know how many. I can't tell you. I do know of some that were. I know of one, you know, who was with the Communist Party. That's another reason, you know, I became active. She was such an articulate gal. Boy, I'm telling you. I used